Hello,
now.
Craig. Hello, Craig.
I don't know what an Oregon.
You don't have an accent.
You are such a pro intro, dude. Way to go, Patrick.
Awesome.
That was really strong. That's a really we haven't recorded in how long? And are you recording all of this because you should be? Because this is the prime.
This is golden.
Golden. This
Patrick,
is the brothers.
You
deep. We are.
You,
the brothers
we?
Deep.
You
are.
We? You insulting me? Is
we
not,
are the brothers. Deep. Normally,
Patrick,
normally Patrick does the intro, but he couldn't think of a dumbass accent to use this time, so he's stuck. He's like hung up.
Patrick, who are
we? We are the Brothers Geek,
and this is our
podcast.
Who is that?
What episode
my name,
number is
my
it?
My name is
Patrick.
What episode is this?
119.
What's today's date?
September 23rd.
Oh, he busted out with a little bit of something.
Okay, who are your two brothers?
Andrew Schmaltz.
Hi, I'm Andrew.
Christopher Schmaltz.
Hi, I'm Christopher.
We're brothers with geeks. We talk about geeky things. Welcome.
Good evening, Mrs. and Mrs. America.
Oh,
the ship
God.
Going press.
Here we go. That was pro. Thank you for your assistance there, Andrew.
Yeah,
we're brothers with geeks. We talk about geeky things. Pew pew pew. It's been a while, brothers.
It's good to hear from you, boys.
It is. It's good to hear everybody's.
Well, how is life treating you these days?
It's been a minute, bro.
It has been a minute. I've been following your posts on your excursion,
dude. I
Mount Hood.
Oh yeah, dude. That was incredible. So
yeah.
I did a 41-mile excursion. It's called the Timberline Ridge Loop Trail. And it's around Mount Hood, and it's 41 miles. We did it in, technically, it's 3 days, but we did a half day, 2 full days, and then another half day. So we did 3 nights, four-ish days. And it was hard. It's the hardest thing I've ever done. I've never gone backpacking like that before. We were out in the middle of nowhere. And I took a bunch of photos, and they're on my Instagram.
Did so you like you when you were overnight? It was just right by the side of the trail, kind of
right
deal?
By the trail, dude. You just find like a camp spot, like
a flat place, and
you just find a. There are certain like camp, like I'm doing air quotes, but like camp
right.
places where it's
right.
like you want to camp because honestly, a lot of the trail there's like no, it's just trail. You're in the middle of nowhere. Like you're.
Well, it's dense, like woodland vegetation.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
Right.
There's a lot of it that's just that, and
yeah, you run into the Sasquatch and you're murdered.
Murdered,
the Semiquas or the you know the apex predator primate
of Mount Hood. Yeah.
Well, I mean the we did run
did
the
you
chance
see
of
Sasquatch.
Definitely not. You do run the risk of bears and mountain lions.
Bear spray, like bat bear spray?
No, yeah. No. We just sealed up our food really well, and
you didn't take bear spray.
No bear spray.
That was dumb.
But did you have pots and pans to beat together to get
people talk about? My buddy had a bear bell.
Okay,
it's supposed to scare them off while you're hiking. But it's such a blaze trail that there's so many people on it all over that it's honestly like it's too.
Is it this national park or is it state park? Like what kind of who maintains this area?
I don't know the answer to that. No.
Okay.
The thing with this trail is it's part of the Pacific Crest Trail. It runs through it.
Okay.
So there's a lot of foot traffic and there's a lot of other trails that intersect with this one around Mount Hood. Like you can get off on some other places. So there's a lot of like other people hiking, just not necessarily. We probably saw 10-15 people that were doing the same thing as us.
It wasn't lousy with people.
It wasn't lousy with people, but like, yeah, you know, every day we'd see anywhere from 10 to 20 people. There's a stretch there where, well, especially on Saturday, it was beautiful Saturday. We saw 50 to 75 people on the trail. So
did you get rained on?
Sunday it rained and I got soaked and I had rain gear and I was to the bone. Yeah. And part of it was, is like, you're hiking up this mountain and it's like hard and you're carrying this pack. So you're sweating inside your raincoat. And yeah, dude.
Yeah.
It was rough, but
sounds rough.
Sounds, but it was freaking awesome. It was
very satisfying, very fun. Yeah. Very, very satisfying. Just beautiful. Just some of the most beautiful things I've ever seen.
That's cool, man. Cool. Dude, this isn't a segue to anything else. I just thought about it. We don't have to get into it, but just beautiful countryside. I recently rewatched Last of the Mohicans.
Oh yeah.
Ashton had never seen it before.
Always so we sat down. Worthy of a rewatch.
Seriously. Mm-hmm. They shot that film in North Carolina and we were talking about it. I want to go. I think some of it was in Shenandoah National Park. I think that's in North Carolina or maybe it's somewhere Virginia. Else. Blue Ridge Mountain. Blue Ridge Mountain. Virginia. So maybe it's the Blue Ridge Mountains or something, but wherever it was in North Carolina.
Shenandoah is Virginia, dude.
Okay. Gotcha.
I know things.
You do know things. You live there. Have you ever been to Shenandoah National Park, though?
Many times.
I think you're full of shit. But whatever.
it's west of D.C. in Virginia. I've been there multiple times.
All I know is from the John Denver song, you know.
West Virginia.
That's West Virginia.
Shenandoah River.
Wherever they shot Last Mohicans, this just like pristine American wilderness. It's supposed to be like the Hudson River Valley, but they shot it in North Carolina. It's beautiful.
Yep. Beautiful.
So, and it's finally kind of like the summer is breaking here in Phoenix and Tucson. Finally, we like had a day of weather today. It was amazing. So it's like we can actually like start to experience the outdoors with more regularity.
Is it still like downpouring at your place right now?
No, it seems like it's let off right now.
It has let up here as well.
Oh, but it's been thunder and lightning and raining all day.
Yeah, remnants of tropical storm covering Arizona.
I'm gonna be in Phoenix on Thursday and then Tucson on Friday. So yeah,
we'll see if that sticks around. It's gonna be fun.
Good to see you,
yeah, man.
I hope the weather is kind of sunny because like I'm gonna be staying at a nice resort with some pools and kind of want to go swimming. And,
I think rain is supposed to dissipate later in the week, so you should be good.
There we go. Sweet.
Cool.
You know, Christopher, you're usually talking about this, but I mean, we obviously talk about geeky things, but we're catching up. So, sorry, listener. I ran a 10K and I did pretty well.
Yeah. So
I got 12th overall.
Wow.
And I finished first in my
age group. Nice.
Yeah.
What 10K was this? What did you run? Awesome.
It's called great, yeah. Sunset on the Springwater, Portland. The 10K, there was a 5K, 10K, and a half marathon. I ran the 10K. There was about 170 people that ran the 10K. And then probably, I think it was about 160 ran the 5K, and then about 150 ran the half marathon. So different groups. It was a decent showing. But Chris Ryan and I ran it. And Chris Ryan did well also, but
That's great.
No, it was good, and I got a T-shirt and I got a medal, and it's awesome. So, yeah,
I ran a 5.3-mile trail race on Sunday.
Oh, dang!
How'd that feel after that?
It was great. My legs feel great today, actually.
That's good.
Yeah,
that's
my Achilles is bothering me for over a year now, but
does this still hurt?
Yeah. Well, it's definitely improved because I can run, and I ran that that trail race, and I love trail races, actually. I think those are my favorite races now. Mm-hmm. Just because it's hard. The terrain is difficult. The footing is difficult. You have to pay attention. But where this race is at Catalina State Park. It's north of Tucson. It's just stunningly beautiful. Mountains and trails, and you run through washes, and it's sandy, and there's lots of elevation change and shit. So it's
dude,
it's
that
hard.
just like makes me think of like a rolled ankle, like immediately when you say
no.
There's
no question. You have to be paying attention. It all the micro muscles are firing because there's never a flat surface,
and you're like you like you're just like pay the f attention to the ground in front
you
of
you. You have to pay attention to every footfall.
That's insane.
And so it's intense. I really like it, actually. It's really cool. Intense. I'm not nearly in as good a shape as I should be to run that really fast, but it was just great to get out and do it.
That's pretty
so,
cool.
Yeah, and my recovery has been great. So my Achilles is fine. My legs are good. So I'm going to be ramping up mileage here because my Achilles is feeling good. So,
good, good.
Yeah, that's cool, fun. Man. That's great to hear.
It was really fun. Yeah.
Let's talk about some geeky movies. So,
did you watch the Emmys last night?
No. I didn't.
I hate award shows. But anyway, part of the news, we have to comment on the fact that Game of Thrones won the Emmy
for best drama
series.
And which... arguably their weakest season ever.
Dude, yes. Yeah,
we've talked about that, but I had to comment on that. The fact that they won.
We have to comment on it.
They won the Emmy. That this is it. Just highlights for me how idiotic award shows are.
Here.
Academy stuff is because
I will hold on. I will say though, they do get things right because they gave outstanding comedy series to Fleabag.
That is
which
good
is
call. That's
an
a very
insanely
good call.
Funny.
That show is hilarious.
And it works on. Yep. Many, many levels, but
Hannah's been telling me to watch that, so
dude,
I need to give
you
could
kill
go.
It in an afternoon. It is 12 30-minute episodes. It is so good.
Like, I will play devil's advocate for a second on I'll play devil's advocate for a second on Game of Thrones because I feel like part of their giving the award to them is like their overall because
yeah, it's
overall,
not lifetime achievement award, dude.
I know.
But
it's,
we've said it before, though. They gave the Oscar to Return of the King for the cumulative Lord of the Rings. They
exactly
really
same kind of thing. I think it's the same kind of thing where they're just like, this was
that
a great series.
That proves my point.
Oh, yeah. I mean, agreed, but that's the way they think about it. Because season 8, honestly,
hey,
the Game of Thrones.
We don't have to debate the last season of Game of Thrones. We've been through them. I just wanted to comment on it that
it
won
give
the Emmy.
Dinklage another supporting actor.
Which is the right choice. He's amazing.
He's amazing. He's good with everything he does.
Yes. He's really good.
I totally support that. But award shows are silly.
Award shows are very silly. Agreed.
that happened. A lot of interesting awards. Award shows are silly, but I mean, you still kind of.
You're in the industry, dude. You would show up to the Oscars, right? If your short film is nominated.
If it was nominated, I would effing
go. Yes,
you absolutely.
Would. And you would have to. And you would take your brothers, right?
Dude, if you he would take his girl. Come on, let's be real.
You would take your brothers.
If you worked on a show that got nominated for an Emmy,
would take your brothers.
Don't know.
You're dead. You're dead.
Wow. So Ad Astra. We watched Ad Astra. All three of us saw it. It just came out, so let's try to do a spoiler-free
recap. Spoiler-free.
But we're gonna.
Oh, and I get to report a little bit. I get to report on legendary listener Sean's commentary on this movie too.
All right, let's go. This will be great. Oh,
so. We'll try, listeners, but if you really want to see it, maybe skip ahead. We might ruin it a little bit. But...
You're going to have to put the time codes in because we might spoil a little bit.
We might spoil a little bit, so you've been warned. So this is like Brad Pitt movie. It's kind of this space opera. I read a tagline by this other podcaster called Tom Merritt, and he described it as... 2001 meets Apocalypse Now, which I feel like is kind of accurate, actually. But like, he's comparing it to two very good movies,
two of the best movies ever made.
Yeah. So I don't know if this movie is that great. I think it asks a lot of questions, but doesn't really have answers.
It reaches for big ideas and big themes,
but it doesn't really like. Come through, right? Like I felt kind of meh about this.
It doesn't feel like it has a satisfying resolution. Yeah. And it doesn't need to be wrapped up in a nice bow. It doesn't have to, it can be tragic, it can be this, it can be that. And it and the end in a lot of ways is a tragic ending, but it just doesn't feel
the
like
the end is not tragic.
You don't think it feels tragic?
Absolutely not.
Okay. What do you feel? How do you feel about the ending?
The ending is not tragic.
Okay.
The very end. And not even when he arrives at the location that he's going, and interacts with the person that he's interacting with. Even that is not tragic.
You don't think that feels tragic?
Not at all.
How did you react to that?
It was this, you know, it's very, very wrapped up in father, son.
Yes.
Angst, right? All of that. And so, you know me, I'm a softy and dad's a softy, and I'm all about sort of my roles as father and son.
Sure.
And I'm all, you know, it's like in my wheelhouse for me to love this movie, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. It's touching on all the issues that I'm dealing with in terms of where I'm at in my life and where dad is at in his life and how I'm dealing with my children, all of that shit, right? I am primed. Sort of absorb all of this high level shit.
Yeah.
And it is the worst freaking payoff of any of that.
Yeah.
In any movie that was trying so hard.
It tries really hard.
It really does.
Just completely fails to deliver any of what it's trying so hard to do. It's obscure. Yeah. It's obscure for the sake of obscurity.
Yeah.
Or
that's a really good way to put it.
It is. I don't. The concepts and the themes are fantastic. I love the whole idea. Brad Pitt, you said this to me in a text, Andrew. Brad Pitt is a freaking star.
Yeah, he is.
But I honestly, this is another point. I'm syndroming. I'm sorry. But the other aspect, I hate voiceover movies. I hate them.
Okay. Yes.
I think this movie, if there wasn't a voiceover to this movie, it would have been like 2001 level of like quiet boredom, like nothing in between.
Yes.
No, none of him is explaining.
It actually might have pulled you into his emotional journey.
Absolutely.
Log entries. Yeah.
The voiceover is so dumb.
Yeah.
If there's no voiceover, I think it resonates that much more because Pitt can pull it off.
Yeah.
Really, in terms of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and this movie, he's having a freaking great year in terms of movies that he's been in.
The positive column in this, it looked beautiful. I love space movies.
Yeah.
Pitt is so good. Everybody who's in it is really good. Like, all the actors are fantastic. All the sound design is really good. The music's really good.
It's a technical achievement that, I mean, it's first rate technical. It looks incredible.
And if you have
the whole moon rover chase was freaking cool.
Before we proceed any further, I have to report that legendary listener Sean has nominated this movie for the Brothers Geek Steaming Pile Award.
Wow.
He has invented a new award for the podcast, so we have to credit.
He's the only one,
Sean.
He's the only one who's allowed to invent this award. Yeah,
he is the only one who is allowed to invent a new award. But he has nominated it for the Brothers Geek Steaming Pile Award.
Wow.
And so we get to decide, of course, because we are this podcasters, whether or not it receives the Steaming Pile Award.
Does he think it's a Steaming Pile Award because being a general in Space Command, he actually has been to the moon and to Mars?
Unrealistic? Well, he's been through the Stargate. And true. So he knows what
he
space
knows what space travel's like.
He's been through the Stargate.
I just revealed that. I was not supposed to do that.
Hold down on a shot.
He's flown a Warp 3 ship as well.
only Warp 3, huh?
Warp 3. Weak sauce.
Get us to Warp 5, Sean. Needless to say, Sean did not like this movie.
It sounds like he abhorred this movie.
I gave him shit about it because my takeaway from this movie was that you should not trust Space Command.
Yeah,
basically. Oh, no, totally. Yep, here, yep. Here's... Here's what I'll say. Like,
that's why that's why I'm not an advocate for it to receive the Steaming Pile Award, because that alone, the commentary on Space Command was all, and the visuals, almost redemptive for this movie.
So here's I hate to disagree with Sean, but like, honestly, I didn't feel that strongly about it. I thought it was kind of like disappointing, but not like really disappointing.
Steaming pile is like hatred.
No, like I did not hate this movie. Nope. I did not. But I
think disappointment is the right word, because
I think there's enough good. I think there's enough entertaining value to the movie. I think there's enough good, and Brad Pitt can carry a movie like anyone can, and he's so good in this movie.
There's some really cool scenes. There's some really interesting ideas, and I like the
like
space
what?
On some.
Talk about an interesting idea, Patrick.
I liked the moon chase. Like, the moon has been colonized to a level that there's like pirates on the moon. I think that's kind of interesting. I like that Mars was so sparse, like it was this own entity where it's like there's a group that lives on Mars and it's like so far away from, and they're just doing their own thing, and like humanity has just touched it, you know. It's like it has a colony there, but like they're like this woman like
clearly
grew up on Mars.
Clearly technology has progressed to the point where
I like those concepts.
19 days, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Less than 20 days.
I like the scene
when technology, all of that has advanced to the point where the solar system is no longer like daunting in terms of reachability.
It's a thing where you know there's traffic, like people make regular voyages. It's not
approaching the expanse, right?
Exactly.
Right. That's kind of the thought I had. This is like 100 years away from the expanse.
I think that's right.
And when in reality, that's kind of like the gold standard. I think we can all accept about hard realistic science fiction.
The expanse is the gold.
The expanse is the gold standard, and this has that kind of.
But
it's
what are
to that
the
level.
Interesting ideas are all along the human colonization and search for. Other intelligence, right? I like
all that. I like that there's like a journey out to Neptune that like it, and it's like him being by himself and going a little crazy. Like, I thought that was interesting. I liked it. It's so like disappointing, but like he gets onto this rocket, like he stowaways on this rocket, and they try to like here's spoiler, but like
spoiler.
They try to like stop him, and they end up killing themselves in the process.
Yeah.
Like that, I thought that was kind of just like, oh man, this is like,
it tries to do things and add drama, levels of drama to things, but it falls flat on.
It's definitely flat.
But I think Chris's comment at the beginning, I think really that's what resonates with me. If they had not made the choice to have a voiceover, to have Pitt, like, you know, his regular check-ins where he has to, you know, psychologically check in with whatever's evaluating him each time, that I think is...
That should have been it.
That's an interesting kind of emotional touchstone, because they build him as this totally competent, cool, under pressure character.
Exactly.
And then you can see him fraying, but the fact that it's given life through a voiceover, it actually reduces the impact of how much he kind of gets worn thin by everything that happens to him, and how he frays.
It violates the principle, which you all both know, and we've talked about this many times on the podcast, is show, don't tell.
Yeah.
It violates that principle. If all you hear from him is his psychological check-in, that is an effective device to provide a window into his fraying psyche, right?
Yep.
But the voiceover bullshit is like a straight narrative.
They did both, which is definitely a problem. Right. Like, they give you too much.
Ham-handed too much.
It might be interesting. Just like there's multiple versions of Blade Runner, there's multiple versions of, you know, movies like that.
Right.
It might be an interesting experiment to see a version of this movie without the voiceover and see how that emotionally can resonate with people. That simple mm-hmm. change, like anything yeah. else, you might leave the same, but you take out the voiceover and see how the narrative changes that way. I think it could actually be a more impactful emotional journey that you go on, because you'll get pulled so much more and you let Brad Pitt's performance inform you as to what's going on rather than right. kind of the constant dictation of things.
Right.
Gotcha. Yeah. So no, I feel like that's good try, Sean, but not quite.
Steaming pile. I don't think it warrants steaming pile award.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's close to being real bad.
Yeah, yeah.
But Christopher, you didn't see It Chapter 2.
I did not. I want to see it, although I am very freaked out by that trailer where the weird old lady gets naked. I'm not a fan of that. That makes me unhappy. That trailer freaks me out, so I don't want to see it.
There. So I saw this movie, and I saw the first one, and I really enjoyed the first one. I felt that
I really enjoyed the first one too.
Yep, it's a really... It felt like a strong, like haunting movie. Like that aspect of it was executed really well.
Yeah.
These kids are being haunted by this thing. And as they come back together as adults and they're trying to rediscover parts of their childhood and the trauma of all of that, I felt that was handled in a relatively well-developed way. Mm. I mean, everyone involved in the movie is the adult versions of the kid from the first movie is a great actor and they pull it off well. But it really goes hard into the idea that it's more of a straightforward monster movie, and they are fighting against this monster rather than having it. I don't know. It didn't resonate for me in terms of it being so scary anymore.
Yeah,
they try to add some humorous aspects of it, which I think were fun, but a lot of times undercut how scary some of the moments are.
There was just a lot of like, yeah, I mean, definitely not as scary as the first one, and a lot of like weird. Here's the first thing I'll say about this movie. The movie's close to 3 hours long.
Mm-hmm.
Way too long.
Wow.
Close to 3 hours long. And you feel it, like, I mean, yeah. it's like, whoa, this keeps going. And there's a lot of like weird unanswered stories and a lot of weird scenes that like, where are they going with this? And they never answer them. They just like, there's that scene and then we move on. And it suffers from that one thing that like, when a movie tells you there's 12 chapters, when you're on chapter 6, you're just like, get to the next. I know what's going to happen. Yeah. You're going to get to chapter 12.
That's not good.
Yeah.
No, it tells you, it's like this guy gets a scene and then this guy gets a scene and then this guy gets a scene. And you're just oh my God, just like.
They're all tormented.
They all end up. Find, you know, discovering what's going on personally, and then they come back together.
Right.
I feel like if they really focus, and it would have detracted from the heart of the story, which is all seven of these people, which mm-hmm. is what the story is about, and that's Stephen King's original vision for it. But if they had really focused on Jessica Chastain's character more, James McAvoy's character more, you know, even Bill Hader's character, I mean, those are the three with the most kind of star power in the story.
Well, and they try to make the I don't remember the character's name, but the actor who's like the least famous of all of them ends up, you know, like he's the fat kid that grew up.
Yeah.
Like he's like a main character, and you're just like, who is this guy? Like they should have cast
he's kind of overshadowed by the fact that
Jessica Chastain, James McAvoy, and Bill Hader, like just standing next to him.
Well, each one of those people can carry a movie by themselves.
Exactly.
And to have them, it's kind of an embarrassment of riches to have them in a movie like this.
It's honestly like it's bad casting. Like that's, to me, that's like when you're so focused on the actors and not like who they're playing. I feel like that's awful casting.
Yeah. I think it's a little bit of, There's so much mega wattage of watchable people in one part of this movie, it's and then much. other parts of this movie, you're just not as invested because the people are not as watchable. Unfortunately, they're just not.
I need to hear more about the creepy old lady who like becomes naked.
Oh, that's a spidery.
Is that messed up or what?
It's creepy until she turns into a giant CGI monster, and I was immediately checked out. Like I was like, don't give a shit. And like the payoff for that scene is not great.
Oh no, yeah. I mean, you get.
I like practical effects. I like old
Patrick.
Like,
you're kind of Patrick. You're kind of shouting.
Sorry, I apologize. Stop shouting.
No, that was good. Shouting is okay.
I like practical effects.
He likes practical effects.
I like practical effects, but you're in that scene with Jessica Chastain, and you get it in the. I mean, the first trailer for this movie is like that 3-minute scene leading up to this crazy spider-looking monster, you know, old lady coming for Jessica Chastain.
Yeah,
and there's more to that scene, and it's creepy, and you're feeling her unease, and you're picking up on things that she's not. So you're worried about her.
Have you read the It book?
I have
Andrew?
Not. Yes, I'm sure Christopher has.
I haven't either. And so
you both need to read it.
I've heard it's very good.
It's very good.
But they don't like my takeaway from the movie is I don't really understand what the It monster is. Cause like this old lady is supposed to be like the mother of Pennywise she was the daughter of Pennywise or something. And then
I think the book would do a much better job of,
and
you should read the book.
But then he ends up being like a space monster. Like, so it's like, I don't understand why, like he's in the photo and she's the daughter of Pennywise, the clown, who is like a dude, a person, and then but then he's also like a space monster. Like I don't get that. So
I didn't get it either.
Like yeah, I don't
it, on the whole, taken as a whole altogether.
Yeah, the book is more coherent than that.
It sounds more coherent.
Yeah.
It's not the it could have been a much more entertaining 2-hour and 10-minute movie.
Yeah.
But the fact that it's 3 hours, you're just kind of waiting for like, okay, when's this going to resolve? How is this going
to
resolve?
Definitely should have gotten to the point a lot faster. Definitely too much bloat, too much stuff.
It wants you to be invested in characters that
you
really
don't give a shit about.
Don't get invested in. It doesn't work for all six or seven characters. So,
and the ultimate resolution, like I've seen the Tim Curry It. And so I knew that like he's going to be a spider at the end of the movie, and it's sort of like how they handled that is really weird.
I've never seen the Tim Curry version. I will say that, I don't. It's just it's one of those movies where, you know, it. I mean, we could talk about a much scarier, much more entertaining horror film, I think.
Yes, we should.
Because Patrick and I went and saw Ready. I mean, I've seen Ready or Not. Patrick saw Ready or Not.
Is this the movie about the wedding, the bride?
They have
the
to bride, play a game.
They go to a wedding, and the game is the family's going to like hunt her down. She has to survive through the
night.
And
there's a whole reason why they do.
There's a whole reason for it.
There's always a reason, dude.
Oh no, totally. And they play up on the fact that it's ridiculous.
Yes.
The strength of Ready or Not.
I like movies that do that.
Here's like really well executed tense horror moments to like the
thriller.
Undercurrent
this
of
is
this
like
is
a,
ridiculous.
Yeah.
This is legit ridiculous. The balance of it is so perfect.
Here's why this movie works and it doesn't. This script is so good and it's so fun and it plays with itself and has fun and it doesn't like take itself too seriously. And
that's awesome.
And
just
it's
like we know, like the first Scream movie was such a good movie because it was so meta. Yeah.
This is what slasher movies are.
It's not self-referential, but it understands that the audience that's watching the film will kind of understand the conventions of a horror movie like this.
Oh, okay.
like, and they get it, the tongue-in-cheek aspect of it.
Tongue-in-cheek.
Well executed. And the woman who plays the bride, who, and I'm going to look her name up because she deserves the kudos. She is so good. And
not so ugly tough. Award for this episode.
Oh, okay. Yes. She is a great looking individual. Let me look her up.
She shares it with Brad Pitt because
Brad Pitt's like all time.
Not ugly award.
He's like on Mount Olympus of not.
Yeah, but I mean, he, for this podcast, she shares.
Samara Weaving is her name.
Samara Weaving.
She plays the bride. She is wonderful.
She's so good in this.
In this movie, she is legit great.
I saw her a few years ago in a movie called a much worse movie called The Babysitter on Netflix, directed by Mick G. Have you seen this movie?
I have not.
I have actually seen and was tempted to watch it when I read the description of that show.
It's kind of meh.
The only reason I know about it is because I follow Bella Thorne on Instagram and Twitter, and she was in that movie. So
she's in that movie
on her social media.
She's like the best part of that movie, but the movie overall is pretty blah. But
absolutely, I recommend so this movie, Christopher. You would really enjoy it. It's a lot of fun.
I gotta check it out. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's got some gore and it's got some kind of intense, you know, horror aspects to
it. This is an adult movie. This is a very adult movie.
It actually works on an emotional level too, because there's this real kind of family reality to what's going on, because it's all these people that know each other. It's like this ultra heightened kind of ridiculous premise. And then you actually have kind of mothers and sons who are
holy crap
dealing with the reality of it. What are you holy crapping?
She's going to be in Bill and Ted Face the Music as Thea Preston. I love that.
Bill S. Preston Esquire's possible daughter.
Yes.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
I love that she's in this. Yes.
Cool.
Oh my God.
Recommend this movie highly, Christopher. You should see it or not.
So. I will see it for
good.
Sure.
Good shit. Great. But
Carnival Row.
We all watch Carnival Row. This is on Amazon Prime. It's kind of a like how spoilery should we be with this one? Like it's been out for a while.
It's an alternate universe kind of Victorian England style setting.
Steampunky, but also kind of like Russian. Like the uniforms reminded me very much of like a Russian kind of like,
but it's also Irish mythology. Yeah. Tiernanoc is Irish.
Yeah, the Fae definitely that kind of aspect to it.
That's Irish. Yeah,
they kept, and I like just in terms of the world building, we can get into more specifics. But I like the kind of the references they make to Saint Titania, which I mean the Fae, you know. There are certain members of the Fae who worship Saint Titania.
Yeah.
And Titania is the queen of the Fae in Shakespeare's Midsummer Night's Dream.
Oh,
so pulling that aspect. Yeah. I kind of like that aspect of it. So it
loves that.
And then the human characters, they refer over and over to, you know, thank the martyr or bless the martyr, so there isn't a Christianity, let's say, but there is definitely a religion that people adhere to or practice. So I like that it is an our world, but it's similar enough that we kind of understand the the faith relationships and things like that, and that gives a nice texture to everything. I think
it touches on sort of standard sort of thematic elements, right?
Definitely
being afraid of the other and discrimination and all of that kind of thing. But I enjoyed the show because I thought it did a great job. I love the world building. And there were, frankly, some amazingly romantic and beautiful moments in this show that were between human and fae that I found absolutely enthralling.
Just I'm going to stop. Are you talking about Orlando Bloom and Cara Delevingne? Or are you talking about...
I'm talking the puck. And there are
scenes
involving the two of them that are as romantic and
I agree.
And as fraught with emotion as you will ever see on TV. I loved every moment of all of that.
You know,
I just thought that was a beautiful storyline. I just love that.
You know what I got touches of when I was watching this? And totally different, like, show world, but, like, very much like Penny Dreadful. Kind of a...
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely has that, you know, Victorian aspect to it.
Victorian.
The modernity meeting the, you know, kind of the ancient...
100%. 100%.
Yeah, supernatural. Yeah. Which we, I mean, we loved that kind of marrying of those two themes and ideas.
Really enjoyed it.
I think Penny Dreadful does it better. I think Carnival Row is kind of a cousin to that idea. I don't think it's... the drawback for me, and while I enjoyed the series, I watched it in 2 days. I never at a point felt like I was like lost or I was bored or anything, but I don't find Orlando Bloom or Cara Delevingne's characters that compelling. I like kind of the mystery aspect, and I like how Orlando Bloom's character gets caught up in that. And
the murder mystery, when the murder mystery started becoming like more of a they're involved kind of a thing, really interesting turn. Like, I didn't see that coming at all.
And
I
the political, like, the, and we're wrapped into the political intrigue and the governance of that world. I mean, I thought that was all really done, how it all tied up together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like that too.
Very satisfying to me.
I didn't find the two leads very compelling. That was the kind of the main drawback for me, unfortunately.
I like Orlando Bloom, and I really like Cara Delevingne. I liked, I don't know her character's name, but I'm looking at IMDb right now. Jan Fiss. Hold on. Let me find out what her character's name is. She plays Imogen Spurnrose. She's like the sister to
she's the aristocrat who falls in love with
with the satyr. That storyline was really interesting to me. Like, I really liked that a lot. And there's really interesting characters in this movie.
In all honesty, you could kind of feel that coming from a couple episodes off, that they were eventually gonna have some kind of romance. I think that she initially has this distaste for him, and he has his own agenda. But they find aspects of each other that they start to appreciate.
Well, there's this layer of class. Immigration and like racism, like racism, class, and immigration stuff is so
all of that
so topical and interesting, and
it's well done.
Well done.
I mean, and we said it before, an ongoing theme here is good sci-fi, good science fiction, good fantasy can hold a mirror up to what's actually going on in your life, or, you know, can explore larger themes in a
Carnival
fantastic
Row
way.
Definitely does that.
Definitely does that. And it's effective, and it brings out kind of those aspects of it. The actress, the funny little tidbit, the actress who plays Imogen, she was the original Daenerys Targaryen in the first Game of Thrones pilot.
Really?
I didn't know if you guys knew this, but there's been the very first episode of Game of Thrones. They reshot a bunch of the episode. They recast Emilia Clarke as Daenerys.
No kidding.
The original Daenerys Targaryen was the actress who played Imogen.
Wow.
In this.
Talk about changing your life. Jesus.
Right? So.
I think she's great.
I really liked her in this particular. I mean, I can't imagine anyone else playing Daenerys
She's
Targaryen.
The sister of younger sister of Mr. Darcy in Pride and Prejudice.
She is.
Yes.
She's the one who plays the piano so well. Oh, I forget her name.
Pianoforte, yes.
Oh, yeah.
She's so good.
If you guys haven't seen, listeners, if you haven't seen The Pride and Prejudice starring Keira Knightley, it's a really, really good movie.
It is on regular rotation in the Schmaltz household.
Have you seen it, Patrick?
I've seen it.
I really like it.
You guys are just having like a freaking...
I love that movie.
A Pride and Prejudice moment. It's all good. Yeah.
Sometimes a little romance is good, man. Romance is good.
Well, honestly, a lot of this show is like
Carnival Row is lots of that.
It's a lot of romance. It's a lot of like, I mean, it's got a murder mystery aspect to it. It's got like that, all that like political intrigue and like racism in it. But it's also like at its center, few love stories going on.
It does a good job of world building. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, no, and they definitely ended season one with a cliffhanger that could lead into season two. And I
couple
I guess
of them.
I think yeah. I saw online within the last few days that they have renewed it for season two. So there will be a season two.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. So
now, cool. if you're thinking about watching Carnival Row, I would say give it a shot because it's pretty good. Like
the third episode really is what got me. The first couple episodes are all right.
What happened in the third episode that drew you?
That's the flashback episode where you learn how.
How
Orlando Bloom and Cara Delevingne meet, and you really kind of see the war for Tir na n'Og, and how that all. That episode is what really kind of cemented it for me. He's like, okay, these two really do have a history. I like where the foundation of their relationship and how it breaks. I was pulled more into their story during that episode than the previous two episodes.
I love the idea of like two warring factions going into this like magic land to seize its like riches. We're gonna war over this, and then this group of magic humans who are like displaced they're becoming immigrants because their home country has been like destroyed by these
the benevolent quote unquote benevolent political power. I mean, they lose the war, the pact basically conquer the fairy realm or whatever.
Yeah.
And, the Berg take in refugees, but as they explore in the series, they become an underclass almost immediately. So it's well worth it, and it's eight episodes, and it's high quality television. I mean,
sure.
I've watched. So I did a complete. This is something else. I mean, I'll just mention it. I completely watched Star Trek Discovery season one and two. So I got completely caught up.
Wow.
And I mean, for all the flaws of that TV show and the painfully kind of, I don't know. She's just not compelling. The lead actor is not compelling. It is a fantastic looking TV show. Like, it is feature level quality, good sci-fi. I think that's what would impress me so much about Star Trek Discovery. And Carnival Row is the same one.
So it's unwatchable, dude.
Did you watch the Pike stuff too? Like all
season two. Anson Mount as Christopher Pike is the best part of season two. He's great.
I watched season one, all of season one, and then I got to season two, and it's just really not good. Like I couldn't do it. I love Star Trek. You know, I love Star Trek.
I know, we all do.
I'll watch the hell out of Picard.
Oh, me too.
Watching Picard. Oh yeah. So pumped for that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Even if it's bad, I'm just going to power through.
Because he's compelling.
He is absolutely compelling. Patrick Stewart is.
Yeah.
Easily, he's watchable, 100% watchable.
For sure.
Yeah. And so anyway, every single dollar Amazon spent, you can see it on the screen.
That's true.
It's a great looking show, Carnival Row. Anyway.
Cool. So we should talk. We all played like some video games. We don't usually talk about this very often, but
not recently anyway.
Not recently.
We haven't been playing a whole lot.
We haven't.
But Chris, you've been playing Monster Hunter, the new
DLC. Iceborne. Yeah, Iceborne. I've been playing the hell out of that. It's more Monster Hunter. That game is awesome, and I played just a crap ton of it when it first came out, and then fell off of it. Because I was, I played so much of it, and then
you got burnt out on it. It happens.
Yeah, it wasn't a whole lot for me to do other than grind for all the gear, right? But I chose not to do that, and just got distracted by other stuff. But Iceborne came out, and so I did that, and it's more Monster Hunter, the new monsters, harder game. It's master rank. Now it's low rank and high rank were the original game. This is master rank. And damn, these monsters hit hard. And different strategies, even old monsters have new attacks and variations on their patterns of attack. And so it's fun learning all of that. It's fun sort of encountering all the new monsters. There's a whole new area that's as large as the previous areas that presents a new challenge. And the new story is interesting. And I'm having a ball with it.
It's awesome.
It's a great game. It's a great game.
That's awesome, man. Did they change anything or like add anything like of note that you want
to? The one thing of note, because I'm a Switch Axe player, I do Switch Axe and Bow, and the new variation on your fighting is the Clutch Claw. Have you read about this? Where
you know
instead of the stinger where you can shoot little rock stones or whatever, now while your weapon is out, you can fling out this thing called the Clutch Claw, which attaches to the monster and pulls you so you mount it.
Oh, okay.
And so, and there are special attacks associated with the use of the Clutch Claw that softens up the area that you're attacking, that allows you to, if you Clutch Claw the head, it allows you to fire all of your stones into the head of the creature, causing it to run straight into a wall. If you're sort of in an area where there are walls or cliffs or whatever, it will charge into the wall after getting hit in the head with all of your stones. You can fire them all at once, and then it will do massive damage to itself because it runs into the wall. That's cool. Variations on sort of that is fun to use the Clutch Claw. And I'm not the best player in the world. But I've actually gotten, with the Switch Axe especially, I've gotten more and more proficient with using the Clutch Claw.
Do you fight these things by yourself, or do you crew up with randos?
I crew up. So the first time you encounter a monster, the way the game is designed, you have to be solo. Although you can throw up an SOS the first time. But I usually like to always try doing it solo. That was one of the other changes, is they altered the difficulty so that it scales appropriately now. Whereas if you're by yourself, it's doable. It's still actually really hard, but it's doable. And actually, it's easier to do if everybody knows what they're doing. It's easier to do with a group of four. And so, but my approach is always fight the thing by myself, just to learn its moveset and its attacks. And then I almost always fail. this game is notoriously hard, and so I almost always fail the first time I meet a new monster, and so I have to. And again, I sometimes fail 40 minutes into a fight, and that's so like demoralizing.
Yeah,
this game is hard. It's brutal. That way. It's brutal.
Yeah.
And so, but once you do it solo and you've seen the cutscene and you're introduced with the monster, you can then join up with a crew and fight it together, which is what I usually do, because I look for that quest and join with a group of four, and it's a lot more fun with a group of four.
Sure.
And and it's easier, especially and most of the players who are still playing that have Iceborne are high level players who know what they're doing, and so you still get killed. I still, you know, fail missions quite frequently even with four player group. Mm-hmm. But it's still, the game is so fun. And you approach it in different ways, and you really got to grind up new weapons and new armor. It's a hell of a game. I mean, it's just, the expansion is a hundreds of hours worth of game.
Wow. Jeez. That's pretty cool.
Yep.
That's awesome.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it
good.
Is.
I will be playing it for a long time.
Nice.
Yeah. Excellent. Andrew, you've been playing Destiny 2 again?
Yeah, I booted it back up. They have an expansion coming out next week, and I had just burned myself out on that game so much that I probably hadn't touched it in over a month, is my guess. But I got back into it, and I was playing some things, and because just exploring around and doing some missions and things like that. I'm not anywhere near kind of top power level, and I haven't grinded any gear in a while. I just got back into it. I was playing it again, just trying to rediscover my enjoyment of the game. And
you're just trying to like get ready.
Remember the mechanic. Remember how much fun I used to have.
When does the expansion come out?
Shadowkeep drops on October 1st, so next Tuesday.
Oh wow! Okay.
Yeah, so, you're going. I'm interested in this particular expansion because for the first time in Destiny 2, we're going back to the moon.
Yeah, which right.
In Destiny 1, the moon was my favorite environment.
Okay,
all right. I really enjoyed all the missions and the look of the moon. So I'll pick up Shadowkeep and I'll play it. It's gonna be like $40, I think. But I haven't bought a game in a while, so I'll play that and I'll get back into it. There's gonna be new ways to like bump your light up faster. Things like that. So I'll be on level pretty quickly.
Well, sweet.
Yeah, no, I'm excited for that again. Just so that was kind of the game that I booted up and played recently. Just trying to rediscover why I like that game so much. And the gunplay is always so much fun. It is such a fun game to just go and shoot stuff.
It's very tight.
It really is tight and fun to play. So that comes out next week. So I'm getting excited for that again. So I'll be playing much more Destiny 2 in the near future.
Awesome. That's awesome. I rented Borderlands 3 because it came out. I played Borderlands 1 and 2 and my buddies bought it, and it's okay. It's just like they're really excited about it, but I honestly like the game is kind of more the same, and there wasn't a lot of like big differences, especially like it should look really, really good and parts of it look better and the shooting is a little better and there's more guns and stuff like that, but it's I don't know, I was kind of underwhelmed by it. I thought it should have been more. The difference between like Borderlands 1 and 2 was very like groundbreaking, and Borderlands 3 I don't really see that difference yet, I guess. So if you're really like hardcore about Borderlands, I guess get it, but like otherwise I'm kind of happy I rented it and didn't buy it.
Mm. Oh wow, okay. Yeah.
So like I'm okay with it. There's other games that I would be.
It caught my the previews for it and sort of the I've been watching some videos online about gameplay and the weapons, and I have been in a I need a loot game. I need looking for that new shiny. I need that kind of game. That's more, much more of an endorphin hit.
It definitely has that. Yeah.
I toyed with the idea of getting that, but I think I'm down
the classes
hole.
That will feed your need for sure. But it's just sort of I don't know, like kind of it's okay, I guess.
For the fact that you waited like 6 years for it, just so you're
well here's what I'll say about the game. The best parts of the game are like the writing. Like it's really funny, like they always are like very tongue-in-cheek, and there's always like these weird references to like other games and movies and excuse me, so like that's still good. Like it's still funny, still well written, still interesting, but it just seems like more of the same instead of like new and interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know, like, yeah, exactly what you're saying, Andrew, for having waited so long, it should have been like incredible.
And it wasn't.
Well, so from what I've read, it follows a formula and tries to incrementally improve on things that are Borderlands. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we were going to talk about A Subtle Knife, but like Chris, you're not up to date.
Nope.
I'm not quite to 9, so maybe we don't talk about it and we just talk about
I promise I'll get caught up by next
I do want to say that I mean we're not caught up on the reading, but that's in no way is reflecting on the fact that this book.
No, we've all been very busy. I think
life
has intervened.
Yeah. We've been very busy. So
what I've read of the book, it's still incredible.
It's still really good. It's
still a really, really great story.
I could probably fake it because I've read the book multiple times. But
yeah,
I want it to be fresh.
So. We want it to be fresh, and I'm not there. Like I've read some of it, but I've been too busy, and I just kept forgetting to do so. So,
I want to, but I do, I mentioned this before, and I want to go kind of full nerd on
do it.
This little passage. Yeah. I read a passage today that just struck me as just highlighting Philip Pullman and just how good his writing could be. So bear with me. It's a couple paragraphs. So
okay. All right.
Let's hear it.
Tirelessly, they flew on, and tirelessly, she kept pace. She felt a fierce joy possessing her, that she could command these immortal presences. And she rejoiced in her blood and her flesh, in the rough pine bark she felt next to her skin, in the beat of her heart and the life of all of her senses, and in the hunger she was feeling now, and in the presence of her sweet-voiced blue-throat demon, and in the earth below her and the lives of every creature, plant and animal both. And she delighted in being of the same substance as them, and in knowing that when she died, her flesh would nourish other lives as they had nourished her. That's just fantastic writing.
That's amazing.
That is that is as good a writing as you'll ever read. And I read that passage today, and I don't even to give you the context of it, but just reading those like 10 sentences, the energy, kind of the immediacy of the character and what she's experiencing, it just pulls you in so deeply. Dude. That is the level of Pullman's writing that you're dealing with.
I wanted to highlight
that's it. That's at the end of chapter, six. So
what are we reading through? Nine.
Reading through chapter nine the chapter titled Theft. So we're reading to page. Well, for those who have a book, it's page 206.
Finishing chapter nine.
I read that paragraph today, and it just struck me as how amazing his writing can be, and that's just.
I have moments. I've had previous moments the same way, and I'll sure to highlight passages from previous chapters.
If you guys have passages that strike you with particular beauty like that one, let's try to highlight those, because I think that's what can get lost a little bit is just the quality of Pullman's writing.
I agree.
As much as we talk about it, just having that example of it, he writes so well.
Yes,
it's intimidating.
These books are really good. I mean, I'm really excited for that show. That's partly why we're doing this, is because the show is coming out. We just want, I mean, the story, this world is really interesting. And this book has taken like a really crazy turn with like all this like other dimension stuff, and like
things have gone bananas in this
things
book.
Have gone bananas. Mm.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Wait for it.
Oh god.
Yep.
I love that. Yeah. Okay. So next time we'll finish nine. Yeah. Please listen on. Andrew.
Yeah.
Do you have some trivia for us?
I do, and I have an admission to make. last week, Ashton and I went and we played Star Wars Bar Trivia.
Okay.
We did not win, unfortunately. There was 65 possible answers, and we got 51 of them.
Oh,
the winning team got 63.
Whoa!
Damn!
It was a team of like 8 guys, and they
How sweaty were they?
It was sweaty.
Okay,
but as an example of some of the difficulty of the questions,
we're okay with sweaty.
As an example, in Jabba's palace, the little kind of rat-looking creature that sits next to him on his palette.
Salacious Crumb.
Chris knew the name. Salacious Crumb is the name of that little rat creature. Do you know the name of his major domo that admits people to his palace?
Like
the dude with the tentacle head?
The tentacle head. Hold on. As soon as you say it, I'm going to be pissed because.
Damn it.
Tentacle head, dude.
I can see it.
Bib Fortuna.
It is Bib Fortuna.
Nice!
Excellent, Patrick. Excellent.
Well done.
That's great. That's excellent.
We proved our worth in our podcast.
We proved
in that
our
moment.
Worth.
Salacious Crumb and Bib Fortuna.
Excellent.
Well done.
All right. We did not get Salacious Crumb, but we got Bib Fortuna. So
nice.
Yeah, those are just that. It went to that level of
Salacious Crumb,
right?
George, what are
fucking,
you doing?
Fucking George,
Lucas, dude. Dude, well, and the best part of it is, these are characters where their names aren't actually spoken aloud in the movies.
Like, right. That's right.
You have to dig into the movie trivia to actually know their names.
Or you have the known extra that books.
Character's name since I was 12.
Right? That's so wild.
Great.
Yeah, there is that it was that level of obscure. Like there was one answer, there was one question, and I can't even remember how the question was formulated, but it asked you to name one of the bounty hunters that appeared on Vader's Star Destroyer during the Empire Strikes Back.
Mm.
And it didn't give you any choices. It gave you like a picture of his head, and you had to guess, you have to give his name.
Oh my god.
And I had no freaking clue. He has lines. He's never spoken to, but he's just standing there.
Is he the lizard looking dude?
No, that's Bossk. I know his name.
That's Bossk. Yeah. Is he the guy who looks like a bug man?
No, it is actually the human looking dude. So there's the bug man, there's the reptile guy, there's Boba Fett, there's the droid,
Boss.
And there's one other like human looking guy. And
there's a human looking dude, and he's got a funny hat. What's the dude's name?
Funny hat guy.
Yeah, funny hat guy. His name is Dengar, by the way.
Dengar.
Never spoke, doesn't speak a word, doesn't get spoken to.
That's level five.
It is level five.
If you know that, that's level five.
There were people at, I didn't know that. Ashton didn't know it. Jesus. There were people at the bar who did know it.
If you know Dengar, kudos on you, bro.
Seriously. 100%. Mad respect.
Mad respect.
You know that.
Yep.
If you'd like to help Andrew with his review, you should email him at kingofthenorth52@gmail.com. If you know Dengar, you should email Andrew and tell him you knew Dengar.
Seriously, email me a trivia question. Because...
On Twitter.
Go to Twitter, brothers_geek @twitter.com, and say, I knew Dengar.
Yes.
Exactly.
Hashtag.
Hashtag, I know Dengar.
I know Dengar.
Email the podcast at brothersgeekpodcast@gmail.com, Brothers Geek Podcast on Facebook, and brothersgeek.com for all the podcasting things. You know, we're on Spotify and we're on iTunes.
We are. Be curious, everyone.